$1 million by fireworks. Every year we have dumpster fires. It's almost like it seems like every year on the 4th of July we'll have a dumpster fire too, from people not disposing properly of their fireworks. But you know, we've had houses lit on fire. In 2012, we had a large loss, Catherine Circle, over $300,000. And then that same year, we also had an apartment fire where the roof was lit on fire. And you see all these fireworks going off, and you think, oh, well, it doesn't light a lot of fires, which is true based on the number that are set, but it does actually light fires. And we've had vehicle fires it seems like every year or two we'll have a vehicle fire, and significant losses with some of them. And I just think that's pretty amazing. Most people don't think of having a fire inside of a vehicle from fireworks, but if the windows are down on a vehicle and a firework goes inside, it will light the inside of that thing on fire and really get it going.
I always hear that sparklers are always underestimated for what damage they could possibly cause if you're not paying attention.
I was just reading earlier this week an article talking about hand injuries and how many of the emergency room injuries are hand injuries, and then how many of those are sparklers. And I just think people underestimate how hot they get, get well over 1,000 degrees, and they're just not appropriate for little kids to be holding on to. And they're marketed towards young children, but they're really not a safe thing for young children to be holding on to. So, if you're going to have sparklers, we recommend it with little kids. You put them in the grass and not have the kids hold them, just so they don't get burned. They can get significant burn injuries in a really short period of time.
And Ryan Courtright, Deputy Fire Marshal, any incidents you ran across that really raised a couple eyebrows in your career?
No, my career as a fire marshal has actually been short-lived. I'm new to the position, so I don't have a whole lot of that experience. But again, I'd probably just reiterate what Ryan said. It's amazing how easily we can get some very large fires started with very small amount of fireworks, or just a very bizarre incident that people wouldn't think about, like going through the window of a car or something like that. So
definitely something to think about. While we have you in here, it's been about a month now since the Hale fire, Hale Library fire incident. I was wondering what new information either of you have had, and maybe if either of you just wanted to kind of talk about that day. I know, Ryan, I'm sure you were on the scene that day.
Yeah, we were both there. It was an interesting fire in terms of a couple things. One, the building's value is very high. It's a very large structure. One of the largest, if not largest, buildings we have in town. The value is extremely high, and then to have a fire that occurred on top of the building is a little bit unique. It's a fully fire sprinkled building, but the place where the fire was started by the roofers ended up getting inside the roof cavity and then underneath some large HVAC units, and was very difficult for our firefighters to get to. They spent a lot of time with hand tools and saws cutting the roof apart. It was very slow, very labor-intensive work. And unfortunately, while that was going on, there was smoke spreading throughout the building by some of the units that may have remained on, and then also from the fire sprinkler system that had gone off. And so, those were all unique things for us. And then it was just, as I'd mentioned before, it was a very warm day. So it took a lot of people, and we used a lot of our mutual aid partners to help us out, which was really good, because we ate through our resources, our five stations, and our people very quickly. Just the size of the building and the labor-intensive work that we were doing.
Was it just one of those things when you first arrive on the scene? It pretty perplexing at first, right?
It was. I met with Battalion Chief Jason Hudson, who was the first on-scene incident commander, and he looked at the fire, and as I arrived on scene and visited with him, there was a lot of smoke coming from the large roof over the great room there at the northwest corner of the building. And so we knew that there was a significant amount of fire. We just weren't really sure where it was at that time. And so, it takes a long time to get in there and find the fire. And then once you find the fire, to get to it and extinguish it. So it was a large incident for us.
And Ryan Courtright, I think you were telling me a little bit off air that you just finished some formal documentation as far as the cause, and you just want to remind folks and on that.
Yeah, the so we had assistance from the Office of the State Fire Marshal and the ATF in conducting the investigation, and actually just here yesterday I received a copy of the final cause and origin report from the ATF, so not any new information, just kind of confirmation of what the investigation had, what it entailed basically, and what the cause was. So the roofing company that was involved was very cooperative. That actually went very smooth. Again, really appreciated the help we got from the state and the ATF in doing that investigation. So
you just want to remind us real quick on that cause, repression.
Oh yeah, sure, you bet. Yeah, it was basically putting down a flat roof, layers of insulation, layers of asphalt sheeting. They use a torch basically to put those seams together, and it was just an accident basically that the flame ended up catching some of the sub material on fire on the roof, and that was kind of one of the, as Ryan was talking about, getting to the fire, that was one of the biggest problems, was the way it started. It was very hard to get to that, where the actual origin of the fire was, and that's why it took so long to get it out and why it took so much water to get it out too. So
any updates as far as, and either of you can answer this, as far as the insurance situation? I'm sure that's probably more of a K-State question, but
it is, and I had read some comments the other day from them, and I know it's a very difficult process to put a number on the kind of loss that they've had. We know it's significant. We know that it's significant not only the building but to the contents and the restoration of those books, and so it's going to take a while before I think they know exactly what the total loss is. But we're anticipating it being an extremely large dollar value, and possibly the largest in our history at the Manhattan Fire Department.
Any estimates on structure damage costs?
We don't know that. We do know that the there's carpeting that has to be removed and sheetrock. I mean, so as you start, and that's on four levels, and I have the 400,000 square foot building.
Yeah, building.
I mean, it's just huge. So I don't think they fully know, and I'll be interested to hear that. And we will get numbers eventually and get them into our report so that we have it for reporting our fire loss.
Very good. Manhattan Deputy Fire Chief Ryan Alms, who you just heard speaking. We also have Deputy Fire Marshal Ryan Courtright in studio with us. Before we leave, gentlemen, maybe just and get the Wamego Pyro crew folks in here, talking about more of the fun side on the other end of the show.
I think we should have gone after them. They should have pumped everyone up, and then we could have brought in that.
Just brought everybody down.
Yeah, be safe.
Just real quick before you go, if you want to remind folks again on those on those parameters and kind of rules and days on when we can get fireworks, when you can shoot it, and just
You bet.
Folks,
so fireworks sales will start at noon on the 1st, and those will go through midnight of the 4th. It's going to be it's legal to shoot fireworks from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. the 1st through the 4th. So,
all right, sounds great. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Have a good 4th, and everybody be safe. More in Focus coming up after the break.